You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's Friday. It's our first hour. So that means it's time for our national town hall meeting with America's senator, Senator Bernie Sanders, the guy I think of as America's senator anyway. The people in Vermont know that he's theirs. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov. Bernie, welcome.
Great to be with you.
Senator Sanders.
So this is 2 days in a row, huh?
Forgive my informality. Yeah, it's great to have you back.
Yesterday we talked about climate change.
Yes. So what's on your mind today?
Well, let me start by recognizing what we all do, that this is a Memorial Day weekend. And it's important for us to take a few moments at least to be thinking about the huge sacrifices that so many people have made for our country. Just yesterday in D.C., I was very honored to have received recognition from the Gold Star Wives for some work that we have done as on the Veterans Committee, and I'm chairman of the Veterans Committee in the Senate. And, you know, when you go in front of a whole lot of people who have suffered so much, young women often who have lost their husbands in war, you realize what war is about and what kind of sacrifices so many people in this country have made. So on this Memorial Day, we remember those sacrifices, and we pledge to do everything that we can to make certain that those people who have served our country get the benefits that they are entitled to and the health care that they are entitled to. And there has been a lot of controversy in the media around the VA recently. And I just wanted to say a few words, and that is to say that if you talk to veterans in Vermont or around the country, what most of them, not all, but what most of them will tell you is that the health care that they're getting at the VA, by and large, is good or very good health care. In fact, we had a hearing a week ago yesterday where I asked all of the veterans organizations, the American Legion on down, representing millions of veterans, their views about VA health care, and what they said, it was good to excellent. Now, when you serve 6.5 million people a year, as the VA does, it's the largest integrated health care system in the country, and I think today about every day about 230,000 veterans get health care through the VA. It's a huge number. Clearly there are going to be problems, and some of them serious problems. But I think in general it is regarded by not only the veterans themselves, but by independent surveys, that the quality of care in the VA is pretty good. The problem that we are facing right now and that is being discussed is the issue of waiting times and access. And I suspect we don't have all of the information yet, but I suspect that varies in different parts of the country. What has happened in the VA over the last 3 or 4 years as a result, I think, primarily of the wars, maybe the economy, is the VA is now seeing about 2 million new veterans coming into the system. That is a lot.
Yeah.
And some, of course, the older veterans have passed away or left the system. So it's a net increase of about 1.5 million, which is a whole lot. And what has to be determined right now is if the VA has the resources to accommodate those veterans in a timely manner. Once they get into the system, they do pretty well. But are they getting into the system as quickly as they should? And I would hope, by the way, on the show, if some of the veterans want to call up, tell me what you think is positive about the VA, tell me what you think is negative, I'd love to hear it. So that's what we have to focus on. And I suspect the problem is more serious in some parts of the country than the other. And then what has happened, which is not acceptable, is a serious problem. The VA has established a 14-day period by which people, new people, are supposed to be seeing a doctor. And I suspect that there are parts of the country where, for a variety of reasons, lack of resources, et cetera, they're not able to accommodate that goal. And what may be happening is some people feel the pressure to do double books and pretend that people are getting in 14 days when they're not. And that is unacceptable. So these are issues that we want to take a very hard look at. We also want to make sure that the VA is run in a way where people are doing their jobs at top levels. And that's going to be an issue that we will deal with as soon as we get back from the Memorial Day recess. Last point is that, as you may know, a couple of months ago, we brought forth sweeping and comprehensive legislation to address many of the problems facing the veterans community. And that legislation had the support of the American Legion, the disabled American veterans, the veterans of foreign wars, the Vietnam veterans, the Iraq-Afghanistan veterans of America, and many others. Virtually every veterans organization in America will understand that, especially since Iraq and Afghanistan, but before that, a whole lot of problems out. To give you one example, Tom, which is very touching to me. Right now, you have, God knows how many, but many, mostly women, taking care of veterans who, you know, perhaps were disabled in Vietnam or even Korea or World War II, going back that far. And these are folks who are on duty, in a sense, 24/7, taking care of people who have sometimes very significant problems. What the Congress did appropriately is, for the post 9/11 veterans, made sure that we provided some help to those caregivers through a Caregivers Act. And I want to see that Caregivers Act expanded, because you have a lot of folks, you know, 70, 75 years old, taking care of their husbands. They don't get a day off. They don't get to the doctor when they themselves should. They need some support. But we brought forth this rather comprehensive legislation, which did a whole lot of things for the veterans. Unfortunately, we only had two Republicans to vote for it. And a number of Republicans voiced concerns about the expense involved in it. And we're talking about spending $17 billion more, which is a lot of money. But compared to a lot of other things, it's not a lot of money. And my view then and my view now is that if you're not prepared to take care of the men and women who served this country and who came home wounded in body or spirit, if you're not prepared to help them, then don't send them off to war in the first place. So, you know, that's an issue that we'll be dealing with, I think, after the Memorial Day break as well.
Yeah, good.
There's another issue out there that, on a very different subject, you have heard me talk about the need to invest heavily in our infrastructure. And I'm happy to say that the Public Works Committee, on which I sit, has advanced a six-year, $265 billion transportation funding bill that would go a good step forward, not as much as we should. But our roads and bridges all over this country are in dire need of repair. And by fixing them, we make the country more productive and competitive, but we also can put substantial numbers of people to work. There is no faster way to address the serious unemployment problem facing this country than rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure. And it's not only roads and bridges, to my mind. It's sewer systems. It's wastewater plants. It is older schools. It is a rail system that needs a whole lot of work. It is airports that need work as well. So rebuilding our infrastructure is hugely important, puts people to work, makes us more productive, and we're making maybe some progress in that on the Senate Public Works Committee. Another issue out there that our website, I invite people to write us on this. We have gotten over 19,000 comments on the issue of net neutrality. And we are forwarding those comments right to the FCC itself. And the issue is, I think, as many listeners know, is that the Internet has been an extraordinary technological advance for democracy and for small businesses and for many other purposes. And what exists right now is that small businesses and bloggers who maybe communicate with a few hundred people have the same level of speed and access as does Walmart or the New York Times. And the issue of net neutrality is that we keep that level playing field, that we don't let these big institutions buy better access than small business people or ordinary Americans.
We will be, that's great. We will be right back with more of Senator Bernie Sanders.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. Check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. And, of course, you can find him over on Facebook quite easily. And welcome back. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, thanks, gentlemen. The Republicans and their partners, the entire billionaire media, didn't give a damn about 40,000 veterans needlessly dying or losing their legs in Iraq, and they don't they don't give a damn about thousands of people dying in Republican states with no Medicaid. But now they pretend to care about a few dozen veterans dying because of Republican budget cuts. General Shinseki is a hero who tried to save the lives of thousands of soldiers by telling the truth to the Bush administration before the war. And what's his crime now? Demanding that veterans be seen in less than 14 days. Do you think it's a disgrace the way he's been treated by Republicans and the media?
Well, let me just say this, Paul, is I think a lot of the media coverage has not been fair. And in terms of Shinseki, I hope everybody knows that we have a gentleman who was a four-star general, Army chief, head of the Army, during his tenure. And what Paul is referring to is that during the build-up to the war in Iraq, Shinseki was very, very brave. We all know that the Bush people and Don Rumsfeld and others were pushing in every way that they could to take this country to war, and they were trying to minimize the impact of that war. That'd be a very quick war, nothing to worry about. And what Shinseki did is, and he was, I think, at hearings, but very public on this, he said, well, you know what? If we're going to occupy Iraq, it is going to take us many, many troops. I think he was talking about hundreds of thousands of troops. I don't have the information in front of me, but he said it's going to be a lot more difficult than some people are telling you. Well, that is not what Rumsfeld and the others wanted to hear, and he ended up leaving his position as Army chief, and some say that he was forced out. But it took a lot of courage to tell the truth about what the war in Iraq would mean in terms of in terms of the occupation and the number of people needed to occupy and what the potential cost of that war would be. So we did tell the truth. And right now, what everybody should know when you're hearing attacks on Shinseki is that not only is the VA now taking care, healthcare system, taking care of about 1.5 million more people than we did just a few years ago, and most of them who are in the system are getting good quality healthcare. The claims backlog, you know, people have heard a whole lot about that. Republicans jumping all over them. What, apropos of what Paul is saying, what our Republican friends forget to tell us is that under the Bush administration, if you can believe it, the entire claims process until 2009, when Obama came in and Shinseki came in, was done by paper. So can you imagine, Tom, that you have an individual veteran who literally has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pieces of paper filling up filing cabinets for one case?
Yeah, I've seen the pictures.
And imagine, multiply that by hundreds and hundreds of thousands. That's where the Bush administration left the claims process. And I remember distinctly when Shinseki came in, we talked about it when he was nominated, about to be approved. He said, we're going to transform that. I don't know exactly how we're going to do it, but we're going to go from paper to an electronic system. So right now, the claims backlog, which was significant for a variety of reasons, has been reduced by 52% in the last 15 months. And in fact, Shinseki is on his way to substantially and virtually eliminate that backlog by mid-2015.
That'll be marvelous. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Our Brunch with Bernie Hour here, our National Town Hall meeting. We'll be back with your calls in New Mexico, Texas, Colorado, Illinois, Colorado, California, Wisconsin, Virginia. Welcome back, Tom Harmon here with you. And Kevin, listening on KTRC 1260 in Santa Fe, New Mexico, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, sir. Thank you for everything you do, Senator Sanders. I've been waiting to ask this question for quite a while, but what would it take to get the CBO to score Medicare Part E single payer? And wouldn't it be beneficial in that it would cover off some of these veterans falling through the cracks and on Medicare and all of that?
Kevin, great question. I think, and my memory is vague on this. I think actually there have been some studies done on that in the past. And what we should mention before I answer Kevin's question is that because, you know, the VA covers, by definition, service-connected veterans. Those are people who have suffered injuries in war. But they also cover a lot of other veterans as well. For example, veterans who are recently separated from war who are not service-connected are going into the VA right now. You have veterans who are not eligible for Medicaid for one reason or other, but are still low income. You have veterans who are not really poor but want to get into the VA because they appreciate the quality care, who pay a copay, et cetera. So a lot of veterans are using the VA today who are not necessarily service-connected. But Kevin's question is an important question, because what Kevin is asking is, what about healthcare in America in general? In so many words, what Kevin is asking is, can we provide a more cost-effective healthcare system, a better healthcare system, than we currently have? And isn't there something wrong that we are the only major country on earth that does not guarantee healthcare as a right of all people? So I find it very interesting that some of my Republican colleagues are suddenly talking about healthcare, healthcare, healthcare in the VA, and some of these are exactly the same people who have voted recently in the Ryan budget to end Medicare as we know it and convert it into a voucher program, who have voted some 50 times to repeal the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, Obamacare, which now has added somewhere between 12 and 15 million people to the insurance rolls. They have voted to make massive cuts in Medicaid, which, by the way, will certainly impact a whole lot of veterans who are now on Medicaid. And they support those states around the country who are not expanding Medicaid as they should because of the Affordable Care Act. So bottom line here is, a Medicare for All single-payer program would provide quality care to all of our people. And obviously, we still need a VA to take care of the veterans. But it would provide quality care to every man, woman, and child, and doing that in a much more cost-effective way than is currently the case. Everybody should know that in the United States today, we now spend at least 50% more per capita on healthcare than do the people of any other major country who provide healthcare to all of their people. And yet our healthcare outcomes in terms of life expectancy, infant mortality, and the treatment of a variety of other illnesses in many cases does not compare to some other countries. So we've got a long way to go on healthcare. The goal must be healthcare for all through a Medicare single-payer system.
Bernie, we got a bunch of vets here who want to share stories with you. Ray in LaSalle, Colorado. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator Sanders. Thank you so much for what you're doing. Tom, we sure miss you here in Colorado on the air, on the radio. Senator Sanders, my experience with the VA, as a Vietnam vet, I was encouraged over the years to make sure I sign up with VA. I finally did so last September. It's been nothing but a joy having my experiences with the VA. Within 2 weeks of sending in my application, I was in for a very thorough physical exam, detailed questioning about my health status, free flu shots, free shingle shots. I mean, it's been marvelous. I happened to mention to one PA that I may have created a hernia. 6 o'clock that night, I get a call from my direct PA advising me that she had set up a counseling up in Cheyenne at the VA hospital for an evaluation. Wow. I'm totally impressed with the VA system from my experience.
Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for that. You know, because as I mentioned earlier, today the VA is seeing, as they do every day, over 230,000 veterans. And it's clear. I mean, every hospital is going to have its problems, and not every doctor or nurse is 100% doing what they should be doing. But in general, what you are telling me is what I am hearing from many, many veterans around the country. And we have got to get that word out, that by and large, the VA provides good quality care. Many of the staff are veterans themselves. They see their work as a mission, not a job. They're trying to do their best. So thank you very much for that comment. And I look forward to hearing from other veterans who will tell us positive or negative stories. But Okay. Thanks very much for that.
Here's another one. Edward in Chicago. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, Senator Sanders, a Vietnam veteran here, too. I have a kind of a different opinion on this enrollment system at the VA hospital than the Vietnam veteran from Colorado. I'm glad he said you could get it done in 2 weeks. I didn't know that. I thought it would be 2 months. But you now have to fill out financial papers. You have to see your doctor a certain number of times, I think once every 2 years. You have to be placed in a group. They have like 8 groups. all this could take time. I had no idea you could do this in 2 weeks, to be honest with you.
Well, go ahead, Ed. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I am enrolled, and I'm going to tell you, I have a lot of problems with this system, because with this system now, I basically am dependent upon a doctor to do anything, to get my eyes checked, to get a colonoscopy, a chest x-ray. Everything has to go through my doctor, whereas years before, I just went into VA and said, give me a chest x-ray, give me a colonoscopy, set me up for an appointment. I'm dependent upon a doctor that I don't know is going to be there. That's my complaint.
And does that slow down your treatments?
Pardon me?
Does that slow down the care that you're getting?
Absolutely. If I can't see a doctor, I can't get anything done.
Okay. Good.
That's
good point.
The problem.
Okay. Ed, thanks very much.
Yeah. And we've interesting feedback. We have just 5 seconds. We're going to hit the break here.
Well, what I'd like to do if, Tom, you can give preference maybe today to some of the veterans.
Yeah, I've asked Danielle to move them.
Positive, we want to get negative, we want to hear the truth.
Yeah, I've asked Danielle to move them up to the top of the board, although we only have 12 lines, and 10 of them were full when you put out that call. So those.
Okay.
But as people call in, the lines roll over. So we'll be right back with more of Senator Bernie Sanders and our Brunch with Bernie.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov, and you can easily find him on Facebook as well. And welcome back to Talk Media for the rest of us, Tom Hartman Program. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. And Bernie, you're...
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay. Ed, in Choctaw, Oklahoma, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thanks for taking my call, and greetings from the state of denial.
Oklahoma, right.
Otherwise known as Oklahoma, huh?
Pardon?
Otherwise known as Oklahoma.
Right.
Exactly. the VA system is a fantastic system. I have very little that I can say that's bad about the system, and I've been in it for years. The one problem I do see is every year I get a new primary care physician, and they always complain that they have to see one patient every 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's they don't have enough time to spend and find out exactly what's going on, and so they end up leaving. And so every year I get a new primary care physician.
Ed, thank you for that. That is a problem within the VA. It is a problem within the United States of America. I just had was at a meeting this week. It was on single payer, actually. And a young doctor came in. He was not with the VA. And he said, you know what? Doctors are getting burned out. And morale is very low within primary care physicians. Their pay is too low. Too much pressure is on them to see more patients than they're comfortable in seeing. And they also have to fill out a whole lot of forms and, you know, negotiate with insurance companies. So Ed, thank you. So I'm hearing from Ed that the care, he says it's a fantastic system, but the problem is the pressure on primary practitioners, which exist in the VA, I know, and outside of the VA as well. Ed, thanks very much for your comments.
Jim in Denver, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator.
Hi, Jim.
This is about 2004. I had Kaiser, and I was watching the price go up 10%, 20% every year. So since I was a vet, I checked into it, and I was able to enroll in the VA process. But it took like 3 years before I was assigned a primary care physician. And when they did an excellent office visit. They found out that I had prostate cancer.
Wow.
But then it took a couple months before they could do the surgery because there's a lack of doctors. And the doctor was excellent, and they took care of the cancer. And I'm good today. But there is a doctor shortage because I had some eye problems. And I went into the doctor's office, and there were about 100 people waiting in the office. Some that just got out of the war. They were blind and being led around by their spouse. Mm-hmm. And so I went on my own to have that done. But and now I'm 65, so I'm on Medicare, so I kind of relieved the space for other vets to take mine.
Thank you, Jim.
So summarize for me, what I'm hearing you say is that it took too long to get into the system. Yes. Once you're in the system, the quality of care that you got was pretty good. Is that what I'm hearing?
Excellent, yes.
Yeah, excellent. Okay. Okay, Jim, thank you very much. And take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jim. Mark, in Chico, California, you're a disabled vet. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, how are you doing? You know, when I go to the clinic here, we get changed to different doctors every 6 or 8 months, and there's not enough doctors up here. When I go to San Francisco VA, I get treated great. The doctors are good, but there's never enough doctors. And it's so hard to get an appointment because you usually see somebody that's in medical school and maybe not quite knowing what they're doing. And it's to the point where I can't walk anymore because I'm trying to get a foot operation. Other than that, they're great. So
what I'm hearing you say that you don't have a regular doctor, that your doctor keeps getting changed, yes?
Yes.
And in San Francisco, you get treated very well, but what you're perceiving is there are not enough doctors there.
Yeah, I've been trying to get a foot operation for quite a few years, and now it's to the point where I can't hardly walk. And I got peripheral neuropathy, and I have a bone coming through the bottom of my foot.
I don't. And you can't get the operation that you need through the VA in a timely manner?
Yes.
If you could leave with Tom's staff your name and address, let me see what we can do about that.
Okay, Mark, I'm going to put him. Mark, I'm going to put you on hold. He's on line 9, Danielle.
Take his name.
And we'll get his name and phone number, and you can contact him. Bruce, in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, you're on the air. You're a veteran. You're on the air with Bernie.
Well, I'm not a veteran, but I'm involved with a group here in Sioux Falls, Senator Sanders, that are concerned about our town of Sioux Falls seizing some property from the VA that has been planned for future use of the VA. We've recently gone through a city election out here, and we've kind of lost control of being able to help the VA in their plans for growth out here. Senator Daschle did a lot of work to preserve our VA hospital. I recently had to use the VA quite a bit with my father, who is a World War II vet. Mm-hmm. And now,
let me ask you, how did you feel about the care that your father got at the VA?
Oh, my God, it was fantastic. We finally found out that the underlying root of my father's problems for years, the staff was absolutely fantastic, and we're so happy to have been able to work with the VA. My father fell into the donut hole, on pharmaceutical donut hole, and through the VA's drug program, my father got to live for a few more years. So we were.
Well, thank you. And I gather you're going to fight the fight in Sioux Falls to make sure that the VA can have a facility there. That's the issue, yeah?
Yes, and what's happening right now is the city has decided.
I don't want to go into great length about that because I want to hear from other veterans.
Okay.
But, you know, thank you. And
Bruce, thank you for the call.
Keep up the good work there.
Okay. Al in Rome, Wisconsin, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Bernie, I don't envy your job. My big question is, when is travel pay going to go back to the way it was? It's totally dysfunctional right now.
I know. Here's what you got there, Al. Before we do that, Al, I want to ask you this question, and I'm going to give you an answer about travel pay.
Okay.
What is your experience with the VA health care? Do you like it? Is it good? What's the story?
Okay. The people are good. They try, but I can't get what I need. Most of what they want to give me is so degraded, I just don't even bother anymore.
What does that mean, that most of what you get are degraded? So you're not happy with the health care?
No, not at all.
Okay.
My problem is my agenda doesn't fit big pharma.
I'm losing that, Al. Are you not getting the medicine that you need? Is that the point?
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Okay.
I qualify for everything, but I can't really get anything. That's what it comes down to.
Okay. All right, Al. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Al. Janice in Jacksonville, Florida. You're an Iraq war vet.
Hey.
You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey, Tom and Senator Sanders. Thank you both for the work you do.
Thank you.
Hey, my Jacksonville, Gainesville area VA is care is excellent. I guess we have a relationship here with the University of Florida, so that helps. My doctor takes all the time I need. I've gotten surgeries in a timely manner. He calls me at home. Now my concern is the claims process and the tendency for them to deny claims.
Okay. Good point. And Janice, thanks very much for calling. So what you're saying is that the care you're getting in Jacksonville is excellent.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Janice,
okay, thank you very much, Janice.
Okay. Rick, we have just 1 minute till the break. Rick in Geneva, Florida, a quick comment for Bernie.
Yeah. Hello, Senator Sanders. Yeah, I agree with other people. The care is good. I use the Orlando outpatient clinic. The care is good. They're kind of crowded, so sometimes you have to wait a bit, but the care is great. But the gatekeepers, the compensation and pension people, you would think it was their money. You know, they just treat you bad, and they just don't want you to. I mean, I'm 100% disabled, PTSD, and it took a law firm for me to finally get a claim through.
Okay. All right, Rick. Thanks very much for that comment. And
thank you. Okay. And we got 5 seconds before we hit the music here, Bernie.
Okay.
In fact, there it is.
I appreciate the veterans calling in, and I hope on this special day, as we celebrate Memorial Day, I hope we'll hear.
We have a board full of vets for you.
Okay, that's great.
Washington, Wisconsin, Illinois, New Mexico, Virginia, Illinois, Texas. Yeah, got a bunch of them. So we'll get back to them right after this. It's 15 minutes before the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, our national town hall meeting with Senator Bernie Sanders, who's chairman of the Veterans Committee in the U.S. Senate.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And visit Senator Sanders' site at sanders.senate.gov. And, of course, you can find Bernie on Facebook. And welcome back. Crystal in Renton, Washington, listening on KBCS. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello. I'm Crystal Lynn in the chat room, so shout out
great.
To them.
Hi.
And I am a veteran, Reagan era. Recently, I've been in the VA program for years, but last year, my husband, partner of 10 years, was finally dying after a long illness. And the people in the VA, the professionals moved in to help me with the bereavement. And then they realized, I'm going to be homeless. So suddenly I'm in this other program also. And now I am in transitional housing for veterans only. And, I mean, the safety net was there because I'm a veteran.
Right. Well, and Crystal, you know, thank you very much for calling, and I hope things go well. But what I'm hearing you say is that the VA was able to provide you with a variety of services, help your husband and during the transition period, and you're getting decent housing now. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much.
And, I mean, in a couple years, I'm going to be in subsidized housing because of the vets.
Well, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you, Crystal. Nick in Kenosha, Wisconsin. You're on watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator, I want to thank you for what you've done to my daughter. For my daughter, I talked to Tom, I think it was a few months ago. My daughter committed suicide last year. And I want to thank you and your staff for responding to her letters, even though her congressman, the local one, never did. And I just want to thank you.
And she was a vet, right?
I am very sorry for your loss, Nick. Is there anything we can do? What, Nick, do you have any thoughts about the VA that you want to share?
Well, she was an Iraqi war veteran. She was disfigured. And the problem was just the waiting for for psychiatric help.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I can't really blame them. I mean, they're really overwhelmed. I mean, all these kids coming back from these wars, it's just, I guess, it was too much for them to handle.
And, well, the truth is that you're right. We're looking at 200,000 men and women coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan who have PTSD or TBI, traumatic brain injury. That is just a huge, huge number. And a number of them are going into the VA, and it is a difficult issue for the VA. No question.
Plus, it's just in the last couple of years that the VA started, or the federal government kind of started officially recognizing Agent Orange from the Vietnam era.
Yep.
And so that's expanded that.
Senator, just that letter that she was holding from your office in her hand, and that's, I never seen her smile for a long time. That meant so much to us that you did that for her.
Well, I'm glad that we could do that, Nick. And you hang in there.
Nick, thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. We have just about 20 seconds before we hit the break here. Yeah, just a few seconds, and then
Tom, first of all, I want to thank all the veterans who are calling in. I know we've been focusing on these issues today, and there are many, many other issues out there, but it is important for us all to know what the VA does well and what it does not do well and how we can improve that system.
There you go. We'll be back with more with Senator Sanders in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, right after this. Tom Hartman here with you, and Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, sanders.senate.gov, his website. Robert in Cuamato, am I saying that right, New Mexico?
Yes, sir, you got it.
You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator.
Hey, Robert, how are you?
I'm doing very fine, thank you. And I would like to tell you that ever since I got out of the Navy in the 80s, every now and then I've had to use the VA, and it's always been very good. And about 4 years ago, I had a major stroke, and I must say that I'm so thankful that they took care of me very well. And I was in the hospital for quite a few months, and all the people working there, 98% of the people, I would say, were most professional and worked hard to help myself and the other veterans around. It was great.
Okay, Robert, thank you very much. So I'm hearing from you that your experience with the VA has been a positive one.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Robert, thanks very much.
Thank you, Robert. Mark in Downers Grove, Illinois. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Mark?
Hello. Yeah, are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, Mark.
You're on here.
Sorry. So my question, well, statement, comment, whatever, is my brother is a veteran. He was in Iraq twice and Afghanistan once. And they deemed him, I think, 76% disabled.
Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with him. I mean, he does have PTSD, and I'm not trying to, you know, put that down any because that's a major thing, and I know that. But my problem with the VA is they just bought him a $375 house because he's disabled.
They bought him a house for how much?
And I'm sorry, they didn't buy it. They didn't buy the house. He got a VA loan.
VA loan, yes.
Okay, but he is also getting paid by the VA because he's disabled. So virtually the money that he gets from the VA pays for the house. And my problem is his wife is getting paid to be his caretaker. They go out and go golfing. They go travel. There's nothing wrong with him. So all these tax dollars, you know, for however the money comes, is being, you know.
So, Mark, you think your brother's a moocher? Is this a sibling rivalry or a real story?
No,
I don't know.
No, I love, you know, my brother did a lot over there, and, I mean, he's debt. This, I'm just saying, this could be for anybody.
Yeah.
I don't know why they're paying for all of this money to somebody that is perfectly fine when it could be going to something else or somebody that needs
it. Thank you very much. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you, Mark, for that.
Keep it coming, Tom.
Carlos in Moreno Valley, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yep.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
My complaint is this. I've been fighting for over 14 years with the VA with many issues, dealing with discrimination, stereotypes. I feel the same with our other veterans. They act like they're comp and pen. I've had problems with my comp and pen. My case has gone all the way to the Board of Appeals. It has been remanded like 3-4 times.
So, Carlos, you feel you're being discriminated against?
Yes, I feel I've been discriminated. I have an injury that I have since 20 years from the Army on my ankle, and needs an operation. It's hard for me to walk on it.
Are you, Carlos, are you accessing the VA system right now, the healthcare system?
Yes, I am. I'm accessing. I had to leave the Long Beach VA.
Let me ask you this. Do you get good care at the VA, or you're not happy with the care?
I'm not happy with the care because the primary doctor, they don't have enough time. Then they're strict about how they regulate medication. I'm suffering in pain. It seems like they have no motion. It's like the waiting time is too long. I went to the emergency room for 4 hours. I couldn't even get attended.
Okay.
I left, you know, still feeling terrible because I was having severe back pains. I suffer from fibromyalgia. And I've been diagnosed since 2003, but yet it seems I can't get my compensation.
Okay. You're going through the process right now. You're at the appeal board, and you're doing the right thing in making your case. Okay. Thank you very much, Carlos.
Thanks, Carlos. Richard in Munster, Indiana.
Richard.
You have feedback for Bernie?
It's really funny. I just got a letter today from the VA. I go to the pacemaker clinic in Chicago, and I've never had anything but positive results. I get my ProTime INR check there. Down in Crown Point, and I get my drugs there, and I get my pacemaker checked. And one time I went to get my pacemaker checked, and the physician's assistant or whatever she is, the nurse practitioner, asked me why I went off of this one drug. And I said, well, the VA doesn't pay for it. She says, I'll get it for you. She got it for me. It was like, wow. So
you've had a positive experience with the VA.
I have a very positive experience, yes.
Okay, very good.
Richard, thank you very much. Bernie, if I could just make an observation, we have just a minute left. It seems to me that every single person who's called in with a complaint today, central to their complaint has been pain. And I know I had an injured shoulder earlier this year, and I was in incredible pain for several months. And my doctor was afraid to prescribe, you know, serious narcotics for me. Mm-hmm. And so I was just walking around in pain. In fact, it was spiking my blood pressure to the point where I was taking blood pressure drugs because of the pain. And I'm wondering if the VA's docs, like my doctor, are just afraid because the DEA is all over everybody if they prescribe narcotics.
Well, I don't know if they're afraid. I think there is a concern within the Department of Defense and the VA and the medical community in general about the overuse of certain drugs.
Yeah, and it's a legitimate concern.
And what the VA is doing, by the way, Tom, is being very aggressive in trying to get people off of opiates and into complementary and alternative medicine. And they've done some kind of breakthrough work in yoga and meditation and acupuncture, which appears to be having some positive results.
Yeah, and that's a good step.
Let me just, as we go off the air, Tom, thank all of the veterans who called and all the veterans who didn't call, and thank them all for their service to our country. We appreciate so much what they have done.
I join in the sentiment. Senator Sanders, thanks so much for being with us today.
Bye-bye.
So we'll be back with Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. 6 minutes past the hour. It's Anything Goes Friday. Probably a good thing I didn't end up with those narcotics. You know, I could have turned into Rush Limbaugh. You don't think so? No, I don't think so either. I know from past experience in my life that I can take strong painkillers when I have strong pain, and when the pain goes away, I can stop taking the painkillers, and that's the end of that. But apparently enough people can't that we have a problem with that in our medical system. So I'll just leave it at that. Anyway, because, you know, thankfully my shoulder is now fixed and I'm no longer wearing a sling, and life is good. Anything Goes Friday. I got a couple of rants for you, but I'll pop them in a little later on in the program. Manuel in Grays Lake, Illinois. Thank you for calling. Thanks for listening to BCPT. Hey, Manuel. What's up?
With President Obama pushing free trade and the Democratic Party refusing to make unemployment insurance extension a national priority, are you seeing data that in the 2014 and 2016 elections that we the people would be voting against the Democrats rather than voting for the Republicans?
I think, Manuel, that the president's support of SHAFTA, the TPP, and his inability to publicly shame the Republicans into, specifically John Boehner, into allowing a vote on the floor of the House of Representatives to extend long-term unemployment benefits for 2 million Americans. I think those two things are not going to cause people to say, I'm going to vote Republican, because they get it, that the Republicans, you know, screwed us all on these things, and that the Republicans are worse on trade than the president is. But I think that it is, I think those things, those kind of things do discourage people, and they do drive down the number of people who go to the polls. People just say, ah, screw it. And this is why I think it's really important, particularly with the midterm election, to say, A, the president's not on the ballot. And B, if the Republicans get control of the Senate, or if they hold control of the House, which will happen if you don't show up to vote, even if you don't like a couple of the things that Obama has done, you know, I can give you a long list of things that he has done that you probably would love. But nonetheless, it's not about Obama. It's about, you know, whether the Republicans are going to run this country on behalf of the billionaires and the multinational corporations or not. And that's a damn scary prospect to me. It really is. And so I think that people need to get out there and, you know, show up at the polls. And, you know, I'm assuming, Manuel, that you're not a Republican operative trying to drive down the progressive vote. But whether you are or not, hopefully the answer I gave is going to encourage people to show up and vote. Devon in Blacksburg, Virginia, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Listen, there's a situation going on with the good Marines from Camp Lejeune in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
That's similar to what's happening right here, right now, today. Who are represented in part by environmental patriots of the New River Valley. Here's the commonality. The good Marines at Camp Lejeune were exposed to toxins in their drinking water from the mid-50s to about 1985. The Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, a division of CDC, has come in to evaluate their cancers. The Marines actually set up a registry for people who were stationed on the base then.
Hmm.
What happened a month ago or so is that the director of ATSDR was asked to resign. Senators Dingell, Hagan, and Burr all wrote to ask that she should resign because she disrespected the Marines from Camp Lejeune. And here's the similarity. We just had a health assessment done on the Radford Army Ammunition Plant, but the Department of Defense paid for the study.
Right.
So they didn't find perchlorate, which is a serious contaminant there. They didn't even look at the there was a private group that paid to test drinking water wells, and they
perchlorate is rocket fuel, isn't it?
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, sir.
And it's pretty poisonous stuff, and it does contaminate water supplies very easily.
Yes. It leaches right out of the soil into the groundwater table,
yep.
And it was found in 4 of 5 private wells that were tested here, but the DOD-funded ATSDR assessment kind of wanted to just blow it off.
Yeah, well, they like their rocket fuel.
They like it so much that when EPA wanted to make it part of the Safe Drinking Water Act, as in a regulated contaminant, in 2012, DOD came in and lobbied hard to shut that down.
Yeah.
So as a result, no one's water, not yours, not mine, is tested for perchlorate. Now, the problem is, it's all over the arsenal, and it was found in the groundwater wells. So I will say, Dr. Tina Forrester, who's the acting director of ATSDR, has received comments from environmental patriots of the New River Valley and seems to be responsive to our concerns.
Good.
But it's important for any Marine who was stationed in Camp Lejeune from the mid-50s to the 80s to know about their exposure.
Was that also perchlorate?
It was solvents, trichloroethylene, perchloroethylene, chloroform. There's a Marine, Jerry Ensminger. He runs a group called The Few, The Proud, The Forgotten. It's actually a movie about them.
Mm-hmm.
So Jerry's been really instrumental in getting that registry set up by the Marines. He's been, you know, we're all working to help people who are contaminated. That was long ago. But right now, today, BAE Systems, who runs the Radford Arsenal, they're poisoning kids all around their plant with their open burning ground, where they literally fire up, honestly, chromium, barium, aluminum, lead, all kinds of toxic stuff. They burn it to the open air next to an American Heritage River, the New River.
And some of these things, like chromium, barium, and lead, are all elements. You can't burn an element. You can simply, disintegrate it into. You can simply aerosolize it, basically, by heating it up enough. Is what's going on.
Bingo. Yes. Yeah. And hexavalent chromium is also not a contaminant that's part of the Safe Drinking Water Act.
Yeah.
So no one has to test for it.
Right.
Like dinitrotoluene. There's all these.
Yeah.
Toluenes that they don't test our water for.
Right, and all the toluenes are carcinogens. Devon, thank you for bringing up the topic. I do have to move along. We got a lot of calls here, and if anything goes Friday, I want to get people in, but excellent points. Marcia in Angier, North Carolina. Hey, Marcia, welcome to the program.
Hi. Well, my question was going to be if Medicare for All is similar to what the VA offers, how are we going to convince people to want that if they're hearing about all these kinds of problems? And how pathetic are we that all those stories that they told, those were good health care stories. That we think that's good health care. That really boggled my mind. You know, any other country would be like, oh, my God, that's horrible.
Yeah.
What they, you know.
Yeah, well, I think what's happening, and this is, Bernie made this point. First of all, we've got two systems. We've got multiple systems in this country. But the VA is socialist medicine. It's socialized medicine. It's sort of what they have in the UK. The government actually owns the hospitals. The doctors, nurses, staff, right down to the janitor, are actually government employees. And they work for a paycheck. Whereas Medicare and Medicaid are not socialized medicine. They are single-payer medicine. They're a single-payer system where it's like you have an insurance policy, but there's only one insurance company, and that's the government. And they pay for-profit doctors and for-profit hospitals and all those kind of things. So that's Medicare and Medicaid. But I'm with you, Marcia. I think that the reason why these Republicans are all high dudgeon, sturm and drang about this right now and want to have hearings and want to get all upset about it, even though they voted to cut funding. In fact, I think it was John McCain put the poison pill in the last bill that would have added billions of dollars to the Veterans Administration. And he put in this thing about we got to bomb Iran or something. I think the reason that they're in high dudgeon about it is because they think that it's going to cause Americans to think that any kind of government-run healthcare system is bad. Marcia, thank you for the call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And the Republicans are all about trying to convince you that government-run health care is bad because the for-profit health care is so profitable it makes billionaires who give money to Republican politicians. Welcome back. Rick, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network in Austin, Texas. Rick, what's up?
Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about Keystone XL.
Mm-hmm.
Keystone XL represents thousands of miles of available pipeline. And it seems to me that any terrorist or anybody who wants to do harm to the United States could easily come over here with, you know, several teams and plant explosives on those pipelines, which would dump into navigable rivers.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but the water that is from those navigable rivers goes directly into watering and providing moisture for our crops.
Right.
And my question is, who is going to be responsible for providing security?
You and me.
Keystone XL. Will it be the oil companies?
No.
Or will it be the federal government? And we have to pay for that.
Yeah, it's us. I mean, you can look at any of the oil pipelines that already exist in the United States. The oil companies are not paying to guard these things. And you're right, they are terrorist targets. But beyond that, they're just, you know, they're vulnerable to degradation, to just, you know, good old-fashioned, it gets old, it falls apart, it breaks. There was in Alaska, one of the big pipelines spilled hundreds of thousands, maybe over a million gallons, because some hunter was out drunk, and he thought the pipeline was a moose or something. He fired into the pipeline, and it sprang a leak. And then the hunter, you know, went back home, and late, it was like months later, his buddies turned him in or, you know, ratted him out. But they didn't know that that leak was even happening for weeks until millions of gallons or hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil had spilled all over the tundra. And it was noticed by a bush pilot who looked down and saw this giant spreading pool of oil. So, no, it's not the oil companies who are going to pick up the bill on this thing. It's you and me. Always has been, always will be. Rick, thanks a lot for the call. Greg in Watsonville, California, watching Free Speech TV on cable. By the way, we're going to hit a break here in 2 minutes, and we're going to be coming back from that with Ben Cohen. Greg, what's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to be real quick here. I'm really surprised at you and the senator taking this thing on the opiates. I have a problem with my back, and I mean, this holistic stuff won't work on me, and there are a lot of other people. I had a friend come over the other day, and she was just really down in the mouth, and I said, Betty, what's wrong? And she said, well, my doctor cut my prescription. We live in a retirement hotel, cut her prescription in half.
Right.
And, you know, this nonsense that nobody should be taking these things. As I say, you know, I mean, if I even wash dishes, stand up for 2 minutes, my back feels like somebody's digging into it with a pickaxe.
Yeah.
So the only thing for some people out there is opiates. And to take this attitude that, you know, let's go along with the DEA, they're really, really hurting people out there now. And you know what the response of a lot of people is that get cut by their doctors? They go out in the street, and then they have to get street drugs.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I think the hysteria around the war on drugs, I suppose you could argue that the people who are abusing drugs are ruining it for people who really need them. We're talking pain meds, opiates here. And geez, we could probably do an entire show on that. Greg, thanks a lot for the call. Up next, Ben Cohen, the co-founder of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream, will be with us to talk about what's going on in Washington State. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Ben Cohen, the co-founder of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream, activist, founder of StampStampede.org, the campaign to get money out of politics where you stamp your dollar bills with one of Ben's stamps that you can get over at StampStampede.org. And Ben, are you still out in Washington State on behalf of WAMEND.org, the Washington Amend the Constitution movement?
Yeah, I'm out here now at the Northwest Folklife Festival, which is huge free festival that they have here in Seattle, and we're here with the amazing Amendomatic Stand Mobile and the people from WAMEND. There's loads of Wamen members that are gathering petition signatures to get this thing on the ballot. And it's kind of a nice time.
That is great. And if people, if you're living in Washington State and you want to, and you can sign the petition to put this on the ballot, so that the Citizens Initiative to say Washington State is on the record as supporting a constitutional amendment to say that corporations aren't people and money is not speech. George Washington did not fight the Revolutionary War to protect the billionaires with the First Amendment, and Abraham Lincoln didn't fight the Civil War to protect the corporations with the 14th Amendment. If you want to do that, go to WAMEND.org, as in WAMEND, Washington Amend, or WAMEND.org, and you can get a ballot, you can sign up, you could be a what do you call it?
A petition gatherer.
There you go. And of course, it's stampstampede.org. Ben, what's your, how's it going out there? Are you having a good time?
Yeah, it's a great festival, and people are coming up to the Amendomatic Stampmobile, which is a 12-foot-high-by-14-foot-long Rube Goldberg money stamping machine, and they're getting their dollar stamped for free. Some of them are making a donation of getting their own stamp so that they can keep on stamping. And, you know, the crew from WAMEND is excellent. They're out in full force because this is a major opportunity. 200,000 people go to this festival. So
yeah. Tell our listeners and viewers, Ben, when you stamp your money, what does it say?
On the Stampmobile, it says not to be used for bribing politicians.
Not to be used for bribing politicians.
Exactly.
That's great.
And, we also have a stamp that says stamp money out of politics, but I like not to be used for bribing politicians. And,
yeah.
When you stamp a bill and you put it into circulation, 900 people see it.
Really?
It's an amazing amplifier.
Yeah. 900 people will see that bill before it gets recalled back to the Treasury.
Yeah, and if you stamp 3 or 4 a day, that's a million over the course of the year.
Yeah, that's amazing what one person can do. Get over to stampstampede.org and get yourself a stamp and start stamping your money. It's a hoot. We still have one from when you were here in D.C., Ben. And so, and again, get over to WAMEND.org and sign up for the petition. Ben, thank you.
Tom,
go ahead.
Because it's you, and because of this amazing audience, because of you, I just want to give you my discount code, which is BC25.
Okay.
Punch that in when you go to stampstampede.org. You get 50% off your stamp.
Okay. We all got a discount code of
BC25. BC25. With the money you save, go over to WAMEND.org and make a donation.
Cool. So go to stampstampede.org, plug in the code of like Ben Cohen 25, BC25, and you get a 50% discount on your rubber stamp to stamp your dollars with, and then take that the other half of that donation and go over to WAMEND.org and help them out so that they can hire some more petition gatherers and signature gatherers, petitioners, whatever you call it, and on it goes. Ben, great talking with you. Thank you so much for the great work you're doing.
Good talk to you, Tom. Thanks for your great work.
Thank you.
All right.
Good talking with you. We will, Ashes in Chicago, back to Anything Goes Friday, Ashes in Chicago. What's up, Ashes?
All right, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, can you explain how the government hands out the subsidies to, like, energy industries, and do they write them a check and they do what they want with it, or how do they do that?
It depends. It varies from industry to industry. And in some cases, the way that the subsidies work is they actually do get checks from the government. And in some cases, they get tax breaks that they can take against their income taxes. In some cases, they get tax credits, which are actual checks. In some cases, they get things paid for, that otherwise they wouldn't have available to them. It really varies from industry to industry. But they've come up with lots and lots of creative ways to get government dollars into their pockets. So, and I would even say that, some of these government contracts are basically a form of subsidy. So, Ashes, thanks for the call. Joy in DeForest, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 FM, The Mic. Hey, Joy, how you doing?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually wanted to talk to you. I know it's important to get out the vote, get out the vote. And I have a son who's a millennial.
Mm-hmm.
Hates TV, hates talk radio, gets so angry at me about that. But he loves free speech TV, so he actually has a lot of respect for you, which is...
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, it's great to me because I do too, but he can't seem to understand. He's a big, he's a millennial. He's a big Green Party candidate person. And I can't get him to understand that the platforms for Democrats and Republicans are totally different. I was wondering if you have anything to recommend as to get him to understand that Democrats and Republicans aren't the same.
You can go to their websites and print out their platforms and read them.
Okay.
I mean, it's just a few pages long. You'd have to, the parties issue platforms on presidential years. You'd have to print out the 2012 president, party platform, and then there'll be a 2016 party platform. But they're generally consistent from election cycle to election cycle. That would be a starting point. And also, whoever's running for office in your particular congressional district in DeForest, Wisconsin, you can find those people's positions on the issues on their websites as well and print those out. Joy, thanks for the call. Good luck. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It stepped on my own damn ladder. Thanks for listening to 92.1 FM, The Mic. We'll do that. Before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you on your media support group for We the People. It's Anything Goes Friday. And Billy in Phoenix, Arizona. What's up, Billy?
Hi, Tom. I have a couple of quick questions for you. The first one is, I was obviously born and raised in England, and we wore school uniforms over there. And I, my kids go to high school out here, and I just think it's absolutely disgusting the way that some of these kids wear their clothes to school. And I think it's a detraction from actual schoolwork. And then the second part of it was, we have a thing in England called sixth form. After the fifth year of high school, basically, we go on to continue on to college if you want to. And there's smaller class sizes, four, five, maybe six people. And we can go on and take college courses, and they're free after school for anybody that wants to carry on rather than going to college or university.
Okay. Quick question, Billy. When you wore uniforms to school, did you pay for them, or did the school or
no,
the government
here's
pay?
The thing. If you had, that's a good question. That was a good. I wanted to bring that up too. We weren't very rich, and we didn't have a lot of money. My mum was a single mother, and we had what they call a grant. So it was kind of a subsidy basically. And my mum would just get a grant that she could take. It's just like a little voucher that she could take to any department store. And you could only buy school uniforms with it. You couldn't buy food. You couldn't buy off-the-wall clothes. You had to buy only for school uniforms. And, yes, people that had money, didn't get the subsidies, but we did because we didn't have the money.
Right. I think that's a reasonable system. And, we've done an entire hour blocks on this in the past where we've had discussions, debates, whatever, about whether we should do school uniforms. The other thing is segregating classes by sex, by gender. All girl classes, all boy classes. One of my two daughters went for a while to an all girls college and indicated that it was just a liberating experience because the boys are so hyper competitive, A, and B, the girls didn't feel like they had to, worry about their appearance anywhere near as much as they did in a co-ed situation, which is a variation on the uniform thing, which is you're not dressing to impress and you don't immediately display your social station simply by the uniform. Although and I'm guessing this happened in England, maybe they outlawed it, I don't know, but I know that in some schools that do have uniforms, that the competition then becomes a competition for jewelry. Who's got the fanciest jewelry? Who's
got? You're not allowed to wear it.
You're not allowed to wear it. Okay, so that's how that's dealt with.
Yeah.
Interesting observations, yeah. Billy. I don't disagree with you, and we'll see if any of our other callers want to jump in on that. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to us there in Phoenix. Sanchez in Long Beach, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Sanchez, what's up?
Dr. Hartman, a pleasure to speak to you as always.
Thank you.
just wanted to jump in here. It's Anything Goes Friday, and I just wanted to offer for the local radio audience here, although they're in Fun Drive right now, so I'm not sure if they're going to hear this or not, that tomorrow is the Worldwide March Against Monsanto, which is the 2014 edition of that, and we already know about the dangers of genetically modified organisms in foods, so I won't elaborate further on that, but just to let the local people here in Southern California know that Occupy Long Beach is alive and well, and we are organizing tomorrow's edition of March Against Monsanto.
That's great. We will be doing a half hour on this tonight on the TV program, and in our third hour today, which I'm pretty sure will be carried live on KPFK, Paul Atchutkoff is going to be with us. He's the managing attorney for Earth Justice, and you know, they're one of the groups that is helped organize this. So we will be talking about this specifically. And thank you for the reminder and for pointing it out for those people who only have an opportunity to listen to this particular hour of our show because they might be driving home at this moment or something. Sanchez, go ahead.
Yeah, to finalize it, that tomorrow, the one that we're organizing here for Occupy Long Beach, we're including live speakers. Some of the people have organized a parody of a classic 60s tune, and now it's going to be an anti-GMO song. And I've also produced a video. It's an hour-long music video. You know I'm a DJ, so my effort is assembling a music mix of all GMO-related songs. There's a really cool group up in Portland, Oregon. They're called the Eatles, and they do all Beatles covers, except they've changed the names of the songs to GMO or anti-Monsanto things, like, hey, you've got to hide your love away becomes, hey, you've got to hide your seeds away, things like that. Anyway, my video is called Stop Monsanto. I just posted it up on Vimeo. And if you go to my Vimeo channel, which is called Sanchez Mind and Music, you'll find it there. It's called Stop Monsanto. It's really a fun mix of music,
okay.
Some good politically aware and very conscious lyrics. A band called Wookiee Foot does a song called Junk Food, and they're a very, very cool band. So I'm throwing that at you. You're a DJ. You used to be a DJ, and I know you're going to be very into this because it's totally groovy.
Well, thank you, Sanchez. Thank you. You may want to post it also on our, my blog on the homepage of at TomHartmann.com. You can post comments to that, and a lot of people will post, you know, things like what you're doing. Hey, I'm doing this really cool thing. Here's the URL. Go check it out. So, Sanchez, thank you very much for the call, and good luck. I wish you the very best. Charles, in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, you wanted to talk about vets and prescription drugs?
Yes, sir. It sure is good to get through to you. I can talk to you for all your hours.
Thank you.
Just a tip for vets. You know that the VA system has a grade level type thing. If you were involved in a war, et cetera, you got better discounts or whatever, less copay.
Right. The more tightly service connected your disability or your problem, the more heavily it's covered by the VA, basically.
Exactly. Well, all right. I was in Lebanon in 1958, but that didn't qualify me for everything, but that doesn't bother me. The VA, for my prescriptions, I paid $8 a prescription through them.
Right.
I'm indigent, and I was just wanting to advise other vets that are and don't have the, no copay type thing, that if you talk to your doctor, he can prescribe the drugs through a local pharmacy, and you can get them for like I pay $6 less through a local pharmacy. Like, it's not connected with Part D.
Right.
Because of my pay wage thing.
Yeah.
I qualify for this. It's a state aid thing, but if you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it.
Okay. Well, that's good advice. Charles, thanks a lot for calling and sharing it with people. Harvey in Berkeley, California. Hey, Harvey, you got a new idea for solar energy?
Well, it's not really a new idea, but do you remember when home siding was all the rage, like aluminum and vinyl siding?
Oh, yeah. When I was a teenager, I installed aluminum siding for about 2 weeks one summer, and then I really realized that was not something that I could do. It was really hard work.
Well, it turns out now they make photovoltaic paint, And they can actually make it in a variety of colors. And titanium dioxide, that's the white in white paint, is actually a photovoltaic material. Like the silicon atom, the outer electron is a single, it's not paired, and there's enough energy in a photon of light to knock the outer electron of titanium dioxide off and made it to run a channel. So you can have white, solar siding, you can have a variety of colors, and the sheer volume of it, and you know, the sun rises, usually solar panels make electricity when the sun is full, is high in the sky, but this way, from sunrise to sunset, if you have solar siding and then solar panels on your roof and then solar siding again, you're making electricity all
day long.
So
are you proposing this, or do you know of somebody who's doing this?
Well, actually, you know, I had the idea, and then I quite a long time ago, but I just recently looked it up on Google, and there are suggestions of it, but there's no company making it. Not that I found. I put in the words photovoltaic siding, and I also put in the word solar electric siding. And you know, there's like they talk about solar siding, like solar shingles, roof shingles, but there's nobody making it. But I think it's a viable, you know, with the technology today, especially with the nanovoltaic paints and so on, that we can have solar siding,
right.
And it would make.
Well, here's a question: I didn't know that titanium dioxide was easily basically ionized by virtue of exposure to sunlight. Are those ions reactive? I mean, I thought that one of the wonderful benefits of titanium dioxide was that it was relatively inert. If it gets into an ionized state really easily, and you've got to smear it all over your face as sunscreen, which it's, you know, also used for, is that problematic? Because sometimes when things are ionized, they interact with organic substances in ways that are not pleasant.
Yes, I'm not sure of that, but I do know, but I did look up, if you put in the words titanium dioxide and then the word photovoltaic, it turns out that it has photovoltaic properties. So I can't speak to what you're saying, but
yeah.
I know that.
Interesting.
So yes, solar electric siding, maybe that's the way to go too.
Interesting. Well, thank you, Harvey. And thanks for bringing out the science geek in me. I learn a little bit, it always leads to another hypothetical question. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Also, the other thing I noticed the other day, that they're advertising denture cream that doesn't have zinc in it. Why are people afraid of zinc? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I don't have dentures, so I don't, you know, I it's not a concern, but I saw that and I thought, well, that's interesting. Zinc free. Why would you say that? I mean, I know people who take zinc supplements. You know, men are supposed to take zinc supplements if they have prostate problems and things like that. I don't know. Just curious. Anyhow, and you know, if titanium dioxide does get into an ionized state when in the presence of sunlight, what does that mean for it being on your skin? Because, like I said, it's used as an agent in some sunblocks. Donna in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Donna, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the direct
side. Hey, Tom, how are you today?
I am great, but I'll get better. Louise and I are going up to New Hampshire this weekend to visit the Salem Children's Village and the Hutter School. And,
oh, wonderful.
So we're going to have a nice time. We're meeting Ellen Ratner up there. So
we'll have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you. So what's up? What are you calling about?
I'm addicted to your show, and unfortunately on Monday I kind of got in late, and when I turned it on and you were in the midst of saying something that just blew my mind, and then I couldn't get enough information because I got into it halfway. You had said something about going into your office and there was a bird's nest, and you believed, and at least this is what I thought I heard, you believed that it was some kind of a camera or a spying device.
Okay.
And I didn't hear the rest of it, and
I've got to be careful about that, Donna. Here's years ago, back when I was 17 years old, I spent the summer in San Francisco, and there was this homeless guy. Actually, I'm mixing up my memories. This guy was in New York. He was a schizophrenic, a street person, and he used to dress up in a tutu and walk around with a magic wand, and he would come up and bless you, and he wore roller skates. They called him the Good Fairy. He hung out down in Greenwich Village, and my friend Jerry was a good friend of his, and so whenever we'd walk down to Greenwich Village and go down to Panchito's for dinner, the Good Fairy would come by and bless me, and the Good Fairy had this theory that pigeons were actually spies from the planet Xenu. And they're here watching us. And the reason why he knew this, and I've been promoting this theory for years on this program, the reason why he knew this was because you never see dead pigeons and you never see baby pigeons. And so it must be that the spaceship comes down every 6 months and disgorges a bunch of pigeons, takes the old pigeons back up and plays back the tapes, you know. And because what do you see when there's, you know, important, powerful people in the world meeting and getting together? What do you see out in front? Pigeons. And so it's kind of a running joke on the show and has been for years. And people, you know, send me pictures of pigeons and say, no, they're real. And I'm like, no, that's a cleverly painted dove. Well, on our boat that we live on, there's a little part of the boat where you tie it to the dock. It's a cleat, and there's a box around that, and it's actually on the inside where we live. So the box is to keep the elements out. And a pigeon got inside there. There's a hole large enough for the rope to go through, and a pigeon got inside there, and she built a nest, and she laid two eggs. And about a month ago, and we had some really, really cold weather, and I'm convinced that the eggs died. And I've got a picture around here someplace. I've got to post it. But we checked a couple of days ago. Sue Nethercutt is visiting from the UK, who runs our chat room, and we popped the door open to show Sue, and sure enough, the eggs were still there. And so I said, ah, they must be listening devices. So, Donna, I'm sorry to have confused you.
Well, I bet that turns out to be an innocuous story.
Yes, it was.
And
it was just, it was just
what I thought it was.
It was just me being silly. So I'm sorry to alarm you. Thank you for calling. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you, and Victoria Jones on the line with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by Goats for the Old, goat.com, and free-don.org. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's going on in the world?
President Obama this afternoon nominated San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro to be the nation's next housing and urban development secretary.
To the surprise of nobody.
To the surprise of nobody, no. But it does give a national platform to this 39-year-old up-and-coming Hispanic mayor from a state, that of Texas, where it's difficult for a Democrat to get a national platform and to get on that next rung of the ladder if he's going to have a national voice.
Yeah, this is a guy that could very easily be a senator from Texas or could you know, conceivably even one day run for president. He's a very, very impressive fellow. Is his brother his twin?
Joaquin Castro represents Texas.
Joaquin.
Congress.
Yeah.
Joaquin.
Is he going to run for mayor? What's going to happen to that mayoral seat?
I don't know who's going to run for that mayoral seat. I mean, his identical twin brother represents Texas in Congress. I don't know why I don't think he would want.
Yeah, that's a step up from being the mayor.
Yeah, exactly.
I had forgotten that. Thank you
exactly,
for that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So now they're both in Washington D.C. That's interesting.
Both in Washington D.C. So the current Housing and Urban Development Secretary Sean Donovan is being tapped for the White House Office of Management and Budget, which is actually a low key but powerful position. Because it deals with regulations.
Yes, and money.
And money. And, for example, EPA will deal with things like the long-pending executive order banning LGBT discrimination among federal contractors.
Mm-hmm.
The EPA regulations about carbon dioxide emissions, possibly things to do with closing of Guantanamo Bay, all kinds of things like that. So Sean Donovan goes there. So what happens to the person at Office of Management and Budget, musical secretary? Well, that, of course, is Sylvia Matthews-Burwell, who has already been nominated and already had her hearing to move to Health and Human Services because of retiring Secretary Kathleen Sebelius.
Wow. So bump, bump, bump. And each one of these is going to require a Senate confirmation, am I right?
Correct. All of them require Senate confirmation. Sylvia Burwell's already had her hearing. It would have been difficult to have it any friendlier, even from the Republicans, all of whom admire this brainiac.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they were feeling sorry for her having to take over Obamacare.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Remarkable. Yeah.
It was remarkable.
Yeah.
So I think she will be confirmed, but I think the other two will be confirmed because Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has changed the filibuster rules and it only takes 51 now.
Right, right. But only with regard to nominees, unfortunately.
Right, exactly. Not with regard to some other positions. But I think they will both be confirmed. There may be some tough questions, but I think they are definitely confirmable.
Yeah, good. What else is up?
Judge Gladys Kessler, a federal district judge, late Thursday, so this story only came out today, lifted an order that she had put in place that had barred the military from force-feeding a hunger-striking Guantanamo detainee. And at the same time, she sharply rebuked the Obama administration for refusing to compromise over procedures that she said caused agony. She said that she faced, quote, an anguishing Hobson's choice involving this detainee, Jihad Ahmed Mustafa Diab. She said if she kept the order in place as the legal fight continues, she risks that he dies, or if she lifts it, she allows the military to take steps to keep him alive using procedures that she said inflict unnecessary suffering. She had proposed a compromise. And the the compromise basically was that he could be put in a place where he would not have to be strapped down in order to have the feeding tube, and he could be kept there and be given the feeding tube. And the Department of Defense said, no, we're not going to do that.
Wow. I don't understand why, A, this isn't more of a national story every day, that we have people who are on hunger strike trying to commit suicide down in Guantanamo, who have been cleared for release in many cases, and
yes,
you know, never were criminals to begin with after being tortured and everything else. And B, why, if they're going to, you know, let's say some of these guys who are on the hunger strike actually were bad guys, if they want to kill themselves by not eating, why not let them?
Well, President Obama has said, oh, I can't let them die. I don't want these individuals to die, President Obama said.
But we're going to torture them by keeping them in prison.
That seems to be the argument.
That's crazy.
This man has been cleared for release.
Wow.
And has never, as far as I can see, been charged with anything.
Wow. Cleared for release.
It's an extraordinary story. But he can't be sent back to Syria because they say that it's basically too dangerous.
Yeah, the Syrian government will kill him.
However, a Central American country has apparently said that they would be willing to take him. But the steps have not been taken to send him there.
Well, and Congress, the Republicans in Congress passed, isn't there an amendment to the NDAA that says that no federal money can be used to take people out of Guantanamo? I mean, isn't the president's hands tied on this?
Well, I don't know the intricate details of where we are on that, because the House just passed the National Defense Authorization Bill yesterday, and I don't know.
But the previous one
exactly where they are
bars the president from using any federal dollars to transport people out of Guantanamo, and that's the problem that he's had, is he can't. Although I still think that he could do it, you know, the way that Jack Kennedy raised money to bail those guys out of Cuba after the Bay of Pigs, you know, I mean, just went to private sources and raised a million bucks to basically bribe Fidel Castro to give us back our I think it was 76 Bay of... Anyway, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And Paul Achitoff is on the line with us. He's the managing attorney with Earth Justice Hawaii, the website earthjustice.org. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Tell us about what's going on this weekend.
Well, we're going to be having marches against Monsanto in various places throughout the island this weekend.
And not just the island, not just the island of Hawaii, right?
Oh, well, we have, you know, several main islands here, and there, I expect there will be marches on each one of them.
No, but I think, isn't this international? This is happening?
Oh, well, yes, absolutely. It is international. It's going to be going on in many countries throughout the world and in many states throughout the United States.
Great. And why march against Monsanto?
Well, it's a way of letting people express their feelings about what is going on in the production of food in our country and the role that Monsanto is playing in that, and to let our leaders know how we feel about it, and to make sure that it is that our legislators are well aware that Monsanto's attempts to continue to control our food supply are just not acceptable to us.
We're talking with Paul Achitoff, who is the managing attorney with Earth Justice in Hawaii, earthjustice.org. And Paul, what is it that Monsanto is doing that Earth Justice objects to?
Well, that's such a lot of things in there, Tom. Monsanto is, I think, symbolic of the control that companies like Monsanto are exerting over our food supply and the way in which we produce food and the way in which food gets to our dinner table. Of course, Monsanto is one of the leaders in production of genetically engineered crops, which have a host of impacts that affect the environment and human health, and those impacts are very well established, and yet many of our leaders seem not to be aware of them. Mm. And those impacts extend from not merely whether the food that's being created from genetic engineering is healthy, but environmental impacts and health impacts, such as the incredible increase in pesticide and herbicide use that is a result of growing these crops, the cross-contamination of non-genetically engineered crops, which has been very costly to farmers throughout the country, the denial of people's right to know and control what they feed themselves and their family, and so on.
Hmm. Remarkable. For people who want information about this, they can go to earthjustice.org, I'm assuming, anywhere in the country?
That's right. That's right. We have offices in about a dozen places around the country, but, of course, anyone can come to our website. There's a lot of information on that.
Now, there are some countries that have pushed back against Monsanto, am I not right? Didn't Chile do something recently, and haven't parts of the European Union pushed back?
A variety of countries have laws that ban genetic engineering. In fact, dozens of countries do. Mm-hmm. The United States is one of only a handful that is as friendly as it is to genetic engineering in our food supply. The European Union, generally speaking, doesn't allow it. There are exceptions, but for the most part, Far more countries do not allow it than do.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw a news story the other day that both China and Russia had turned down shipments of American food because they had GMO products in them. Do I have that right?
Right, that's true. And that's not unique. There are a number of countries that simply don't want genetically engineered imports, and they do test. And when there are even very small amounts of genetic contamination in these shipments, they can get rejected.
Yeah.
Even if you've tested them before you ship them, they will test them when they receive them, and whatever they find, they will act on.
Right.
And, you know, this type of problem has caused some significant economic impact on farmers. You know, a few years ago, the discovery of very small amounts of a genetically engineered rice variety was found in our long grain rice inventories, and the European Union and Japan slammed their doors shut immediately, and that event alone cost our rice farmers about $1 billion.
Wow. That's
remarkable. There's been litigation ever since with hundreds of millions of dollars in settlements and awards.
Remarkable. Paul Achitoff, managing attorney with Earth Justice in Hawaii, and earthjustice.org is the website. Tomorrow is the March Against. Is it officially called the March Against Monsanto?
As far as I know, yeah.
Wow. Remarkable. All around the world. Earthjustice.org. Paul, thanks for coming on and sharing your story with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Tom. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure. My pleasure. Great talking with you, and I wish you the very best. James in Belvedere, Illinois. Hey, James, what's up?
Hey, I love you, Tom. I'd like to make a statement about this $15 an hour for fast food workers.
Uh-huh.
I heard of a Facebook post where they were out protesting, and some of the signs were spelt wrong. I don't know whether that was, you know, something that somebody, you know, fixed, you know, on the, you know. Anyway, the comment was, gee, these people want $15 an hour. This shows you how bankrupt Americans are, can be. And they can't even spell. Well, you don't need to be able to spell hamburger to make a hamburger, or take out the grease out of the fryers, or mop the greasy floor. You know, it's labor. Nobody wants to respect labor. They want to equate it to education. Well, that's not always true in every circumstances. That's not, you know, and when you think about it, McDonald's is not a necessary commodity. It's just a hamburger. You can't share the wealth on just making a simple hamburger that doesn't even need to be in existence. There was a time when there wasn't a McDonald's, and we got along fine. And we could probably, if there wasn't a McDonald's now, maybe some other somebody would make a hamburger that's better, pay their workers a fair wage so they can contribute to society and the tax base, and we'd all be better off.
Yeah, there's two issues here that you're raising, James, and they're both worthy of rants, and so I'll do it very briefly. The first is that we, ever since the Reagan Revolution, we have been dismissing the dignity of work in and of itself. We have said, you know, there's work that is of value and there's work that's not of value in terms of rewarding the worker. And we've moved more and more toward, you've got to have a college education, white collar work is real work, blue collar work is not real work, low skilled work, in quotes, is not worthy of being, of bringing people into the middle class. I think that's just wrong. It is spitting in the face of the American dream. It is just so wrong, and I get these guys on who say, well, you know, these people don't need a college education, or they need training, or, you know, no, there's some work that you don't need any training for other than on the job for, you know, a few days or a few weeks, and it should also pay well enough that you can at least have a decent life, you know, in this country, and we do not respect work. And so that's, you know, apropos of that, we need to be changing the minimum wage. And then, you know, apropos of our educational system. Well, and the other thing is, you know, everybody can't go to college. I mean, the average IQ is 100 in the United States, or the median IQ is 100. It means half of the people are above that, half of the people are below that. Not everybody's adapted to college. That doesn't mean that they shouldn't be able to have a good living by working. James, thank you for the call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I mean, just because you can't write code doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to raise a family and buy a house and you know, live a decent life in this country. Come on. And welcome back. Jesse in Miami, Florida, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. Hey, the subject is no more billionaires. Nancy Reagan says no to the drugs to start the war on drugs.
Right.
Everybody decided that you, when you say no, you got to have a reason to say no, because if you don't, you're going to still do drugs and you're going to still have billionaires. So Mr. Sterling, he says it's the culture that makes him the way it is.
Right.
How can we convince these guys that what they're doing, they pretty much replace the kings and queens when we had the original revolution?
Yeah, they are our kings and queens now. I'm with you. That's why we started the website, nobillionaires.com. And,
okay, now, yeah. No, they're not going to listen if we say no to them. Just okay. No more than the kings and queens will listen to them when they said, you know, no more taxation without representation.
Well,
so
you know,
what do we do now to say, make these guys wake up that they, you know, their way of living is exploitation?
Yeah. Shane, can you easily grab that FDR 5 clip?
Sterling is getting ready to fight. The NBA players could say, we don't need you. We could form a co-op.
Yeah.
And then these guys are still going to fight no more than the kings and queens fought and everybody else that think they God Almighty.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, what's the lessons have we learned?
Well, here's what I think, Jesse, is that, you know, FDR actually took on the billionaires. He called them the economic royalists. He named them. He said, they hate me and I welcome their hatred. He passed laws against them. He raised the top tax rate to 91%, took away their income, pushed through maintained and strengthened the inheritance tax. There were not a lot of billionaires who were created in the United States between 1935 and 1982. It's been pretty much a phenomenon in 1987 when Reagan dropped the top tax rate down below 50%. The billionaire phenomena has been pretty much limited to the last 30 years that we've been living under Reaganomics. And so, you know, step one is to roll back Reaganomics, roll back the Reagan Revolution. And step two is to have, you know, to elect politicians, people like Elizabeth Warren, who speak truth to power, who do say, you know, there's something fundamentally wrong with this, and it's, you know, that it's just wrong, and you know, how we do that. I personally, and I wrote a book about this called The Crash of 2016. Personally, I think it's going to take an economic crash, and I think it's coming. I think it's coming in the next year or two, and maybe even this year. Although I'm guessing it'll be after the elections. But it's going to take an economic crash and a lot more pain before enough people are going to be in the streets like they were in 1930, 31, 32, where you had the bonus army occupying Washington, D.C., and you had people demanding change so that the president actually, you know, a president who was a president of wealth and privilege, Franklin Roosevelt, who had been the governor of the most corrupt state in the country and didn't do much about it. But when he became president during a time of crisis, he rose to that occasion, and we need a president and members of Congress who will rise to the occasion of the crisis. The crisis apparently is not bad enough yet. I think it is, but apparently most people don't. Jesse, thank you for the call. And I think that we should have 100% wealth tax on all income and all wealth and income that's over $1 billion. If somebody can't live on $999 million, they got a problem. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Chris in Seattle, listening on KBCS. It's Anything Goes Friday. Chris, what do you have to share with us?
Hi, Tom. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I've heard before you talk about extraterrestrials, and I am by no means a crazy person. I'm a white-collar truck driver, and I have seen some stuff in my life that I just cannot get past. And a family friend of ours was visiting up from California yesterday, and he basically spent 40 years in the Department of Defense. And I asked him straight to his face. He actually spent 15 years away from his wife on classified orders, and no one knew what he was doing. And I asked him straight-faced, is it preposterous to think that, one, aliens have visited, two, that they are in the government, and three, do you believe in them? And he answered, all he could answer is yes to all three.
Aliens are in our government?
Sorry?
Aliens are in our government? I mean, I absolutely believe that it's impossible, given the size of the universe that we know of, that there are not other life forms out there that are at least as intelligent as we are and probably far more, and that they have figured out ways to travel interstellar space, and that it, you know, the probability is very, very high that this planet has been visited. I'll go along with that. I mean, you know, that's kind of, you know, and I've seen things that I think might well be flying saucers. I mean, I've seen some really weird stuff in the sky that sure did look to me like this was not a natural phenomena, and I couldn't explain. And there, and you know, there's a fair amount of documentation around that. But to take the leap to the aliens have landed and they're in our government, really?
It does sound preposterous. And this man is straight-laced, doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, doesn't do drugs.
But that doesn't mean he's not crazy.
No, I understand that. But he is the family, the way they live their life, honestly, yeah. In my view, he is the most reliable.
Are you familiar with David Icke's?
I have seen some stuff, yeah.
Yeah, because David Icke's, I mean, he's this British guy who has this theory that there are these lizard people and that they have infiltrated us, and that they, and in fact, I think he suggested that Bill Clinton was one, that he zipped on his human suit every morning.
Uh-oh.
And that they are in our government, but they're actually reptiles.
That's pigeons from Xenon, I understand.
Well, no, there's an amazing YouTube video out there of a radio show when Don Rumsfeld's book came out, that his publisher forced him to go on book tour. And he got on this talk show, I think it was a Los Angeles station, you know, a local talk show where you got a couple of shock jock types. And they kept asking him, are you, sir, an alien? Are you a lizard? Are you a lizard person? And he repeatedly refused to answer yes or no. He refused to deny it. And you can, you know, if it wasn't for copyright laws, I'd play it for you. But you can easily YouTube, you know, Don Rumsfeld alien. Go to YouTube.com and just plug in Don Rumsfeld alien, and I'm sure it'll pop right up at the top. And you can listen to Don Rumsfeld for a long, awkward 8 or 10 minute radio interview refusing to deny that he's an alien and being repeatedly asked. And so, you know, it could be, Chris. Anything's possible. Thanks a lot for the call. Katie in Jamul, California. Hey, Katie, what's up?
Well, hi, Tom. And I've always thought that our best great hope would be somebody from outer space landing and saying, just let us clean up this mess. So if they're actually in our government, I'm highly disappointed.
Well, you know, Reagan pointed out that if everybody knew that there were aliens, he said this to Gorbachev, if only the aliens would, reveal themselves, we'd have a common enemy and we could stop fighting among ourselves.
I'm kind of looking at them as a friend.
Yeah, well, that would be nice.
Because if they're advanced and intelligent enough, but then I'm an old Trekkie fan, you know, so.
Sure.
But I'm calling about Australia.
Okay.
And that might be on your board. But I think it's very pertinent to what's going on in this country. And my husband's Australian. My kids are dual citizens. I'm a landed immigrant, and I spend just shy of half of my time in Australia. And I read your book, The Crash of 2016, last month when I was there. And I think you make, and I don't have, I left it in, there, but you made it a lot of references to Australia and used it as an example. And I was just flinching and saying, I wish I could tell Tom Hartman this and this, because what happened with Tony Abbott coming in last year was a change just before my eyes, like we feel here. And, that, you know, if you're not too cynical to write them all off as thieves and criminals, and which I don't, though I've been in politics my whole long life, it was as soon as the Liberal Party, which is the Conservative Party in Australia, got in, many of the things that you were pointing out that are
Katie, your phone is breaking up.
It is?
Yeah. Oh, there. I heard you now. I hear you now. Okay, keep going.
Okay.
You said so many things in my book that I pointed out.
Yeah, that sort of got lost with the Abbott administration coming in, and it happened very, very quickly.
Yeah, Australia has a new administration, for people who don't know, that is basically, this guy is like Ronald Reagan, you know, or George W. Bush, and he's been backed by the extractive industries, the mining industries. The richest woman in the world is a mining billionaire heiress in Australia.
Gina Reinhart.
Yes. And a rather irritating person, apparently, from the way she speaks about the rest of us. And the newspapers, much of the media, is still owned by Rupert Murdoch. And so it's basically the billionaires and the mining interests just rose up and said, okay, we've had enough of this socialist stuff, and we're going to take over the government. And they did.
Well, John Howard was prime minister for quite a while, and he was in the conservative, I'll use that word, party, and the difference over those years wasn't so dramatic.
Right.
Now with the change from the Labor government to the conservative government, it's a dramatic change, and it is almost like they read Tom Hartman's book and said, oh, we got to get rid of that. There's another one. The first thing that Tony Abbott did, literally, it was to get rid of the marine protected areas.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Katie, thank you for educating our listeners.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And for sharing with me confirmation of what I've been reading in the press, it's distressing. Katie, thank you very much for calling. We'll be back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman, here with you. And Anything Goes Friday. Oh, this is interesting. We have six members of Congress who are going over to Ukraine for the holiday weekend to observe the presidential elections. We got to get Steve Cohen back on. In fact, probably on Tuesday, get Steve Cohen on and get his thoughts on how the election turned out and what's going on there. I wonder how America would react. I wonder how these mostly Republican, although Ben Cardin, he's a Democrat from Maryland, is going. I wonder how they would react if China sent election observers to our elections, or Russia. You think they'd, be all cool and down with that? What do you think? Okay, that's one thing I wanted to share with you. Another is a judge in Wisconsin ordered the John Doe investigation, which was getting awful close to Scott Walker and crimes he may or may not have committed, to stop investigating this. Okay, that is news from a month or two ago. Now the same judge is saying, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, that maybe they should release all the records that they dug up when they were doing the investigation. In fact, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel wrote an editorial calling for the records to be released. If they are released, you know, Scott Walker is basically a fully paid toady of the Koch brothers. It could be the end of his political career. We'll see. Facebook. Now, this Anthony Smith in the International Business Times is writing, you know, Facebook is, as you know, talking about their privacy policy. We're going to update our privacy policy and make it easier for people to set their privacy settings. Wednesday, in a press release issued Wednesday, Facebook announced a forthcoming app update in which a new feature uses the phone's microphone to capture sounds in the user's environment, then identifies the song, movie, or television show the user is watching based on what it hears. Once that sound is ID'd, the user has the option of sharing it as a visual component of their posts. In other words, you could just, a button will pop up that says, for example, do you want people to know that you're listening to Tom Petty right now? And you click yes, and it'll just play, hey, George is listening to Tom Petty's new song, whatever it is. Though Facebook assured, but wait a minute. Facebook is turning the microphone on my phone? Really? And maybe leaving it on all the time? Though Facebook assured that, quote, no sound is stored, right reading from Anthony Smith's piece in the International Business Times, the company acknowledged to International Business Times that it does intend to archive the data gleaned. company did not discuss whether it plans to use the same feature to gather data from other sounds heard by the microphone, such as users' discussions about their medications or their children, or anything else they may be doing within the vicinity of the microphone on their phone. Of course, I mean, you think that's weird. Facebook is, you know, Apple already does that with Siri. Right? There's a, you know, it turns the microphone on, and I mean, you have to push the button. But surely they have the ability to listen without you pushing the button if they want, right? Or maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. It's just, I'm just saying, you know, you've got, who's the antivirus guy that we had on? The guy who invented the antivirus software. Norton. No, it wasn't Norton. It was McAfee. Yeah, we had McAfee on our program, and he said, you know, the Bank of America is doing this. Turned out we looked at the Bank of America's terms and conditions. It doesn't say that they can do that, but he was asserting that at one point in time they were saying that. Comcast is building a large – this is a story you will not hear on MSNBC. Comcast is building the largest lobbying team ever seen. Philadelphia Magazine. Comcast is waging a campaign of shock and awe for its proposed merger with Time Warner Cable, fielding one of the biggest lobbying teams ever seen in Washington. The company had its seven lobbying firms to its roster, not just lobbyists, but lobbying companies, since first proposing the deal earlier this year, and is adopting a posture of overwhelming force to try to win approval from federal regulators. Comcast lobbying roster already has one of the largest in the city. The company had 33 different lobbying companies working on its behalf at the start of the year. Now that total is 40. Wow. And then Daryl Issa just sabotaged the Benghazi, the whole conspiracy theory by leaking a memo that showed that the White House at the time that Benghazi was going down, or just before actually, was contacting their embassies saying there's this controversial video, or actually the CIA was. The CIA began the process of compiling talking points. The White House, believed it was in retaliation for the video. ABC talking about the interesting piece over Democratic Underground, Sagami posting that. I thought that was fascinating. Anyhow, anything goes Friday. We bunch of people waiting to get on, so let's get to it. Diane in Sparks, Nevada. Hey, Diane.
Hi, Tom. It's so exciting to be able to speak to you.
Thank you.
I have listened to you for years. I think you're the brightest, most honest man in radio.
Well, thank you.
On radio. And it's called a haboob. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I haven't.
It's a big wall of sand about 1,000 feet up, and it just covers the whole city.
A hole of sand 1,000 feet up?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
up in the sky?
I have it in Arizona all the time when I lived in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, it's a dust storm. A sandstorm. Is it, Diane? Did we just lose Diane? I think we did. Okay, Diane, I'm sorry we lost you, but it sounds like you've got weird weather there. Chris in Seattle. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Going on, Tom? Actually, I'm in Portland over the weekend. I believe
just
walked by one of your daughter's Care Oregon clinics right around here. So
all
over the place, very popular. One other quick comment. I was just at the DMV getting my ID down here. I go to school up in Seattle. And Oregon DMV, actually, they're required to ask every single person that gets a renewal or gets a replacement if they're registered to vote. And they'll actually give you a big, you know, piece of paper there. And they'll show you how to sign up and register.
Yeah, they do the same thing in D.C. The forms are actually glued together.
Oh, very nice, yeah. So my big point, though, was I remember you were talking on Tuesday about privatizing education, and my big giant conspiracy theory is, you know, maybe you have, like, the Bob Corkers, you know, of the world in Congress that, you know, they want to pass reforms that, you know, might, you know, sabotage education, destroy teachers' unions. And that, do you think it's just some giant right-wing cabal to keep these, you know, kids thinking, you know, the Earth is 2,000 years old and that government's a bad thing and that, you know, all this junk science in order to dumb them down. And so when they start questioning things like, you know,
you know, some more progressive ideas. It's like, no, no, you know, you don't want to do that. You want to keep, you know, voting Mitch McConnell and Matt Bevins and all these guys. That, you know, maybe it's just some giant conspiracy. Maybe they're just, you know, trying to keep, you know, people.
Destroy public education, thus dumb down the people so that the dumbed down people will vote for, against their own best interests and vote for Republicans. It makes sense to me, Chris. It makes perfect sense. Thanks a lot for the call. Jason in Arlington, Virginia. Hey, Jason, thanks for listening to Sirius. What's up?
Hey, it's nice to know that election law means absolutely nothing in the United States with Representative Conyers now getting back on the ballot because the federal judge coming out and saying, although you didn't meet the requirements, we're still going to put you on. It kind of reminds me of the old thing when Torricelli had to get withdrew from the race, and then they substituted Frank Lautenberg in the state of New Jersey, even though that violated election law also.
Yeah.
So these seems like all.
So John Conyers got back on the ballot. John Conyers, for people who don't know what we're talking about, the legendary African-American representative from, what, Michigan? Yeah, Detroit area, as I recall.
85 years old, 50 years serving.
Yeah, and apparently he filed his re-election forms late, and there was some question about whether he would be on the ticket or not, and a federal judge said, we're going to put you on the ticket. You don't think the judges should have discretion, Jason?
No, well, because the problem is it's never applied equally. If this was a third-party candidate trying to get into a debate or something else like that,
yeah.
I've seen crazier things happen. And again, you're going to get Coke and Pepsi, and you're going to still get high fructose corn syrup with these guys.
Yeah.
And the fact is we're never going to have –
Jason, if your argument is that we have two systems of justice in the United States, one for rich, powerful people and one for – poor or average people, I agree with you. And which is not to say that John Conyers is rich, but he certainly has political power. And, you know, I can't personally speak to this particular issue. I know the backstory of it. I read the articles about the question of whether he was going to have to run a write-in campaign and all that kind of stuff. But I have not read the judge's ruling. I'm not familiar with his legal rationale for this. It might make perfect sense, or it might just be, you know, hey, we're going to give this guy a pass because he's been around Congress forever. I don't know. But I'll find out by next week and we can talk about it again. Jason, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Oh, Shane just told me the whole John Conyers story and what happened, and I will share it with you after the next break. Shane also explained to me why they don't put zinc in denture stuff anymore, which is fascinating. But it's a fairly long explanation, and we've got a whole board full of calls, and so maybe I'll get into that next week. Carl in Deerfield Beach, Florida. Hey, Carl, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good.
I worked for the nuclear industry back in the 70s, and I used to transport stuff for decontamination all over the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go to Roe Plant, which is the first nuclear power plant to be put online in 1957 for the safe generation of nuclear power for commercial use. And they had a steel dome at the time. They didn't have the concrete with the reinforced rebar inside of it in case they had a meltdown. And I used to tell them I used to go in there, and because I had government security clearance, I'd go in there with a tractor trailer full of 55-gallon drums, and I told them that I got a SWAT team with hazmat suits, with machine guns, and Scott air packs. And once we get in here, we're taking over the nuclear power plant. And they'd laugh at me. They would never check them out. So I'd drive right over to the reactor, and I'd ask them, I'd talk with the health physicist, what's going on? Why are you shut down? Well, we had the fuel rods got moved from containment, and they got into the cooling towers, and I saw Tennessee FR, which is the rules and regulations on nuclear power, saying if you can't get the contamination out of the cooling towers, you have to shut it down or build new cooling towers.
Right.
And it don't tell us what to do. We don't follow the rules and regulations. We do what we want to do.
We're the nuclear industry, after all.
Power plant. I would tell them I could blow up two nuclear power plants in one day. Why would you want to do that?
Right.
That's just terrorism. Oh, come on, Carl. You must have been smoking too much of that wacky weed. And I'd go down to, like, Millstone down in Niantic, Connecticut, and they had two nuclear power plants down there, and they decided to put Unit 2 online, and they didn't want to build a stack to scrub out the iodine-131 from going into the atmosphere, so they decided to modify it. So they brought Unit 2. I was there when they brought Unit 2 online. Well, they got a hydrogen bubble in the reactor. So what they did is they vented into the atmosphere without telling anybody. There's supposed to be evacuation routes. They're supposed to tell everybody. They're supposed to give everybody iodine pills.
Right, because when hydrogen is formed, it's formed by the process that forms hydrogen also forms an airborne form of iodine that's radioactive.
Right. And so I left there. I got the hell out of there. So my next stop was Groton, Connecticut, the U.S. sub-base. So
right.
I go in there, and the admiral of the shipyard says, Kyle, what the hell do you bring onto our shipyard? You're setting our monitors off everywhere. He says, where we store our nuclear spent fuel for the subs, it's not going off underwater. And he says, I told you before, if you bring anything on our shipyard, you may have top government security clearance. But you're a civilian on a military base, and you're subject to military law. He said, I can throw your ass in jail, you know,
yeah,
and fine you, and then take your truck and destroy it and pay, you know, charge your company.
Right. So the net of all this, Carl, is that the nuclear industry, whether it's military or civilian, just doesn't much give a rat's ass about the rules. Do I have that right?
No, what's going on.
I think so, yeah. I'm with you. Carl, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. We'll be right back. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researchers, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, everyone at the various companies that syndicate this program, Westwood One on Cumulus, Pacifica Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Cable Radio Network, Free Speech TV, On Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show from Comcast to Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, to all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, the Progressive Voices Channel on TuneIn, to Netroots Radio at netrootsradio.com, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, who I can say hi and wave to, and she's in the room with me, to the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at Talk Radio News Service, Jay Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. And, John Conyers. First of all, according to all the news stories that we're able to find, like the Associated Press and Huffington Post and whatnot, John Conyers lost that court case. He didn't win it, so he's going to have to mount a run-in campaign, A. And B, it wasn't that he filed his forms late. I was misremembering. It was that he had, in violation of the rules in Michigan, apparently, had out-of-state people come into Michigan to gather the signatures to put him back on the ballot. The signatures were fine. He had enough of them. They were turned in on time. But the Republicans challenged them and said this guy should not be on the ballot because he hired out of state, his campaign had hired out of state people to do the ballot, the signature gathering. Now, I'm guessing there's a backstory behind that. I don't know what it is, but it looks like he lost his appeal and he's going to have to run a writing campaign. So, you know, what we should probably do is get John Conyers on the show and just ask him. He has been on this program many times in the past, and it wouldn't surprise me if he'd be more than willing to come on again. And so somebody remind me to ask Sean or Louise to reach out to John Conyers. Franklin in Phoenix, listening on AM 1480. Hey, Franklin, meteor shower tonight?
Hi, Tom. Yes, there's a meteor shower tonight. It is the, let me get the word here, it came from Comet 209P/Linear, and the name of the actual meteor shower is the Camelopardalis, or Camelopardalids. Is the name of the shower. Relatively new because the comet only recently got captured into our solar system. It was discovered in 2000, let's see, 2008. 2012.
Yeah. So, and comets are giant balls of
passing through
a frozen
debris field.
Yeah, and comets are giant balls of frozen ice that have tons and tons of rock embedded in them, and as they get near our atmosphere, the friction heats up the comet, which causes some of the ice to melt and some of the rock to disintegrate off the tail end, creating the tail and the melting ice and all that creates this tail. And as the rocks come down, they become basically meteorites. They or meteors, I guess it would be. Meteorites hit the ground. Meteors vaporize in the atmosphere. Is that right? Am I remembering correctly?
I'm not all that sure of it myself.
Yeah,
however,
yeah.
What I do know is that tonight, if you want to see them, the peak should be, on the West Coast, the peak should be between like midnight and 3 a.m. On the East Coast, probably between like 3 and 6 a.m. Actually, I think they hear 2 and 4 a.m.
That'll be the peak of it.
But anyway,
that's interesting.
Pretty late night.
I'm going to be in an airplane from 11 o'clock till midnight tonight, going up the East Coast. We're going up to New Hampshire to visit the Children's Village. And Louise and I, so we'll have to look out the window and hope that they don't, you know, come down to 30,000 feet.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to look north, because to be able to see them, you need to look to the north. It'll be just a little bit below the North Star.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for the heads up on that, Franklin. We will be flying directly north, so I'm guessing I'll be looking either east or west out the windows. But maybe we'll see something. Who knows? Linda in Ironton, Ohio. Hey, Linda, what's on your mind today?
Yes, I'm calling in regards to the Keystone Pipeline XL.
Mm-hmm.
The pipeline is made out of that cheap grade steel that comes from South Korea, and they're using that to run that highly, highly carcinogenic poison through our country, and there is many, many chemicals used in that processing for that type of oil, that tar sands. And mine went blank all of a sudden.
Oh, well, you're absolutely right on all those things. This Keystone oil is, it's really not oil. It's ground up bitumen, which we used to call coal, and they call it tar sand, right? It's not quite. And the stuff will not go through a tube, and so they grind it very, very fine, and then they mix it with both water and actual oil, and then push that through the pipeline, and even then it's a thick, sludgy kind of stuff. When it spills, we have no technology to clean up the spills. There was a small spill of this in the Kalamazoo River several years ago, and they're still trying to figure out how to clean it up, because normal oil will float on the surface of water, and you could just skim it off. This tar sands oil settles through the water and down into the soil, and it will just keep going right toward the center of the earth, and if there happens to be a big aquifer underneath there, it will ultimately contaminate it. And it's like, you know, dangerous stuff. It's not good. Thank you, Linda, for the call, and thanks for say that 3 seconds? 3 seconds, Ed, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. We're out of time. Ed, Gene, Robert, Jonathan, Diane, Sam, Ollie on hold. We'll get to you next week, I promise. Coming up next week, we'll be talking about drug testing and why it's time to stop employers, the government, schools, everyone from invading our privacy. Let's put an end to all drug testing. Plus, it's Memorial Day. From all of us to all of you, have a safe and happy holiday. And remember to hug a vet. And remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. It begins with you. Peg, you're in. Get out there and occupy something. We'll see you on, see you actually live Tuesday. We'll be back with a really great best of show.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. and EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.